Calling back all nerds.
Nerds!
All right, good day, nerds. Today, we're going to have a cantina conversation with comic store owner Leif Smith. He's the owner of Mission Comic. And what we're trying to achieve today is a discussion around highlighting his store and his business. And then we're going to discuss really the state of the comic industry and maybe play a little bit of projectionist into what the future, where we see the direction of comics going. Leif, thanks for joining us.
Oh, yeah. Thanks for having me.
So, Leif, real fast, where does your journey with comics start?
I was a sort of longtime fan. So my first comics were like DC Back, Captain Marvel comics, and Tintin comics when I was about, I don't know, 6 or 7. And then I later sort of got more into traditional superhero comics. And, you know, sort of kept on reading throughout. And I was always sort of a super fan that was interested in the business aspects of the comics industry. When the comic store that was in my neighborhood closed, it was actually one of the first comic stores ever. I said for several years, oh, somebody should open a comic book store. And then when I got laid off from my job, I was like, well, maybe I could do that. You know, I did a little bit more research and sort of just did it, and that was nearly 10 years ago.
Okay, so it was 10 years ago. How old were you when you opened up the shop?
I think I was 38.
Okay.
So
long-time fan, interested in the business, and then decided to take a leap.
Yeah, and I really sort of like the mission and the neighborhood that I'm in is pretty eclectic and pretty interesting. It's also sort of been ground zero for a lot of the hyper-gentrification that we've been experiencing here in San Francisco.
So great. So 10 years ago, joining the industry, what were those first couple of years as you getting the shop started? How was that experience there?
You know, the first couple of years are really difficult because you're sort of building a customer base from the ground up. It's not a case of just like you put the comics on the shelves and people show up and buy them. You really have to do a lot of sort of like educating, and you have to sort of build a customer base. You know, luckily the neighborhood that I'm in experiences a lot of change, and a lot of people move into the neighborhood or move out of the neighborhood. So there's people coming in that always are looking for a new comic store.
Okay. And, you know, so this was, you said 10 years ago, so 2008, 2009 time frame?
Yeah. So it was pretty much the bottom of the recession. So things could only improve.
Yeah, a lot of discretionary income going around.
Yeah. No, I mean, things were pretty bare minimum, and saw, you know, that things were already changing. You know, there was already a greater amount of interest in buying trade paperback and reading in that format. And also, you know, the audience for comics and graphic novels was shifting and becoming more diverse and more open. And that was one of my real goals with the store, is to make a sort of like well-lit, clean, inviting store for people of all interests and persuasions that could feel welcome in my store.
Now, a lot of comic stores tend to do certain things to bring customers in to generate that audience. Were you doing any, like, you know, Magic the Gathering nights or meet and greets with local artists? Mm-hmm. Like, how did you go about trying to grow that customer base?
So at that time, and it's changed a little bit since then, you know, there were a lot of fine artists and artists living in the neighborhood, and there were a lot of art galleries. And that was also, that is an interest of mine. So I had a dedicated gallery space where I would show artists that were doing work either inspired by comics or tangential to comics or had a strong narrative aspect. And I would, you know, have monthly art gallery openings, and that would bring people in that wouldn't often not necessarily have come into a comic book store otherwise. And it was a lot of fun too.
Okay, now at the, you know, 2008 was when Iron Man 1 came out, in 2009, like Watchmen and things came out. So you kind of started mm-hmm. the comic store on the leading edge of essentially the massive adaptation of comic books and becoming this super pop culture you know, movie franchises. Did you see that kind of bleeding
and TV,
in?
Yeah,
and TV. Did you see that bleeding into the next 10 years of your comic book?
You know, it's been a strange journey with the media, cross-media translations or adaptations of comics. You know, I think that there's been a lot of successes with, you know, particularly things like Watchmen and The Walking Dead, where there's a more direct one-to-one correlation. I think that, like, there was a harder problem with some of the Marvel adaptations, where you have, you know, 50 years, you know, 80 years of history, where someone is excited about the Avengers, doesn't really necessarily, there's not a clear starting point for them. It's sort of like, do you want to start with 1963 Avengers, which has very little to do with it? Or, you know, do you want to start with, you know, Mark Miller's Ultimates, which isn't even called the Avengers, but clearly it's the inspiration for the movies. You know, at the same time, over that period, you know, as the sort of movies and TV stuff has become more popular, I think in the last few years, we've started to see some of that cannibalized sales, I believe, where people actually prefer, there's so much sort of adapted already that they like watching the adaptations rather than reading the source material. So, you know, I'm not really sure where things are now. You know, I think it's a really much a case by case basis. You know, something like the Umbrella Academy was wildly successful and got people looking for the book. But, you know, other things are like, you know, not as successful, like, let's say, Rick Remender's Deadly Class.
Yeah, I think the more independent routes end up correlating to that one-to-one, like you said, rather than the major Marvel or DC titles, just because, yeah, you hear, you know, Batman's 75th anniversary, and it's like, who's going to read 75 years of Batman to try
no
to
one. No
catch
one.
Up, yeah. You know?
Catch up,
but,
right.
Yeah, but you have like a Walking Dead or an Umbrella Academy, and you look at it, and it's like, oh, I'm only 60 issues behind. I'm only 100 issues behind. Right. I could catch up to that, you know. And
yeah,
you have those big omnibus books and with trade paperbacks. It ends up becoming a more realistic goal.
Well, and I wonder if it's any different than like in the 90s when you had, you know, a whole lot of X-Men fans. They're just watching the Saturday morning cartoon. You know what I mean? They're not necessarily, they're calling themselves X-Men fans who love themselves some Gambit and stuff, but they haven't picked up a comic and actually gone and mm-hmm. read it. So yeah, when you start to really have these really pop culture, really famous adaptations on screen, sometimes it's difficult to go back.
I've long time said that, you know, just because you bought the buy one, get one Batman shirt at fucking Target does not make you a fan.
Yeah.
If you don't have a fucking issue in your basement, shut the fuck up talking to me about Batman, because you really don't know much.
But yeah, these superhero properties, the IP, you know, they've grown bigger than comics for sure. But, you know, I mean, what I like to say is, like, you know, there's a lot more to comics than just superheroes. There's a lot things that you can experience in comics that you can't experience watching a movie or a TV show. You know, there's a length of time with characters. There's the interrupted narrative, you know, the idea of like, okay, you know, you've been with a character month in and month out for years, where, you know, done with something in 2 hours if you were just watching the movie.
Well, and a lot of these movies are only getting made because of the comics. You know, no one's bringing, you know, if you would have shopped Umbrella Academy in a meeting at, you know, some movie studio, they'd have laughed you out of the room, you know. But given the fact that you have it in a print medium and it's selling copies and it is wide received positive, you know, with positivity, then that meeting in the film studio ends up going a lot differently.
Yeah, Hollywood thinks it's a ready-built audience.
Even some, like an independent comic, Legion M, they run Kickstarter campaigns with graphic novels that are purely screenplays that they're just trying to gain some kind of, like, it's almost going backwards, that they're using, they have a movie idea, and they're just trying to create a comic just so that way they have a different way of kind of pitching it and getting it out there and gaining hopefully some traction. But it's with the end goal of movie all along.
Right. Well, in the opposite side, you know, the best-selling comic in my store by far blows everything out of the water is Saga, And that was a book that Brian K. Vaughan specifically designed not to be adaptable, to go so balls to the wall and so crazy with it and so like epic that it really is something that could not be whittled down to a couple movies or even, you know, a TV show. It's just too epic, too grand, and it's
well. See, that's what I would have said about The Boys, also. But that's going to release on show. That's going to release on Showtime real soon. There are a lot of Amazon there are Prime. A lot of things or Amazon Prime. There are a lot of you know, comics that you would think that there's no way a studio could ever touch this, and
I think
the way TV is changing. Nowadays it does open the doors for maybe a saga to get adapted. Like you said, it's too in depth and it's too big to do in a short movie. But I mean, you know, if you could take those Game of Thrones novels and put them into a quality television, I don't know. I think a lot of these, filmmakers can adapt it into a TV medium.
Maybe, but I think there's a special strength to comics as comics, you know, not as just sort of like something to be adapted. That, you know, there's something about the experience of reading a comic that is unique.
Yeah, there's a different reaction when you turn a page and a panel kind of smacks you in the face that just kind of really grips you, as opposed to a scene in a movie, you know. I think we can say it out loud without spoiling anybody on The Walking Dead. But when I turned that page and Glenn's head was just smashed in with a baseball bat, like that panel just ripped through me and the TV adaption of that panel didn't invoke nearly the emotion as flipping a page, not expecting what to see, and it just kind of like jumping right out at you like, holy shit, that just happened.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, I guess to go back in and talk about your store over the last couple of years, you know, really one of the major things we want to talk about is, have you seen a significant change in the people coming to your stores and really sales over these last 10 years?
You know, the first 8 years, I saw a lot of growth year over year. A lot of it, sort of due to big hits like, you know, Saga, The Wicked and Divine, Sex Criminals, you know, these things that were sort of more open to, other audiences.
Okay.
And I did see, you know, a huge sort of influx of women and people of color and, you know, all sort of types wanting to sort of explore this medium. And that was the case for many years. Yeah.
So where are they hearing about these comics? You know, because you just named a lot of independents that, unless you were just browsing the store looking at covers, where are they hearing about these things to actually come into the store and to buy them?
You know, I think part of it is good old fashioned word of mouth. You know, if you read something that you love and you're just like become a evangelist for, and you're telling all your friends, and I still get people coming in, oh yeah, my friend told me about that. And then also, you know, there's a little bit of mainstream media that definitely sort of makes a place for those books. But I think it's also just sort of like creating an environment where people can sort of explore and discover things. You know, I do a lot of all my graphic novels are right up front. I do a lot of face forward facing, so people can see the covers of books rather than just seeing the spines, because, you know, I really strongly believe that, like, you know, the covers, you can tell the quality of a book from the covers.
Yeah, comics are those things that you can almost judge a book by its cover.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And you talk about the demographics maybe changing a little bit. So, you know, everybody wants to think of the stereotypical overweight white dude in the comic book store.
Right.
But in your experience, it's not necessary. That doesn't tell the tale.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think sort of just, you know, and there's a lot of stores that are thinking along these same lines and creating a more open and inviting atmosphere. There's a lot more women's store owners, and, you know, the face of face of comic store owners is changing as well as the audience. So I think those are all positive things. Where I sort of hit a speed bump was in, you know, fall of 2016 and 2017, where I saw a pretty sharp drop off in sales, really.
So, you know, looking at like at Conacron.com stats, 2016 was for industry wise still a big year, but it was the leading edge of then 2017 having the first decline in overall total sales nationwide. So,
right.
Do you think your store was pretty indicative to really what was happening to the industry as a whole across the country for comic stores?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, I have some of my own ideas about it. I think, you know, there were some failures in product. You know, I think Marvel Legacy turned out to be a big sort of misstep.
Yeah, womp womp.
yeah. But I saw, you know, sales drop across the board, you know, on Image titles and other publishers as well. And I think there what I saw is a lot of people sort of pick up three books and put two books back. And that sort of at least on the micro scale in my, you know, very sort of liberal San Francisco, there was a lot of apprehension about the future. You know, things felt very uncertain week to week. And, you know, they still feel a little uncertain. Like I was just listening to the news and it's sometimes really terrifying. And, you know, that, you know, translates into people's buying behavior. And I feel that comic stores can often be the canaries in the coal mine. You know, we're such on the edge all the time that some little thing in the air can really send things tumbling a little bit.
Yeah, with you being in San Francisco and it being a very progressive kind of area and whatnot, did you find that buyers weren't interested in buying the story about the typical cis white male saving the damsel in distress and the, you know, the objectification of women with their outfits? Did you see kind of any of that, the social trends that we're experiencing now kind of play into comic sales?
Oh, sure. And I think that that's just not in San Francisco. I think that's all over. I think, you know, people are hungry for new narratives and new voices. The other thing that, you know, is a little bit more unique to San Francisco is it's super expensive, you know.
That's one thing that we all hear around the country is how expensive it is to live in San Fran.
So, you know, the minimum wage is just about to go up again, which I think is a good thing because, you know, I want the city to be livable, but rents have spiked, you know, it's people's discretionary income is a lot maybe smaller here because they spend a lot more on housing and food and all these things to get by. And the neighborhood demographics have changed a lot where, you know, when I opened my business, there were a lot more artists and service workers. And now it's a lot more tech professionals and Airbnbs and tourists. And so those things have a major effect as well.
And how has the real estate jump affect you as far as price per square foot for store? So you signed a lease, I'm assuming, 10 years ago, and you've had to renegotiate a few times since then. Like, do you find that the increase in community is really kind of driving, you know, costs in your store based on, you know, just the price per square foot of what storefronts cost now?
Yeah, no, actually, I had to move my store 3 years ago because in my original location, after being there 5 years, my landlords wanted to do short leases, like 1 or 2 years, and give themselves the option to jump the rent. And that made me really nervous. So I started shopping around and I found a much more stable long-term situation in what I thought was a better location. You know, it was more expensive, but it seemed worth the gamble at the time, you know, just to have the stability.
No, for sure. Sticking with the financial aspect of running a store, when I first started collecting about 15, 20 years ago, Me and my roommate went to the same store every day. It was Comics Galore in Western Springs. The owner worked the counter every day. We built a really good relationship. Behind me is even one of the three-tier comic book shelves that he gave me when he closed the store. He gave us a bunch of, you know, it was really sad when he had to close down. And from what I remember back then, he was having a big trouble with, like, Diamond Direct. So because he was a one shop owner, they give priority to, like, the, I don't know if Graham Crackers is a national chain or just a local chain, but we have, like,
just local.
Yeah. So we have a Graham Crackers out here, and there's probably over a dozen locations. So a Graham Crackers would get priority shipping over his store, and he found it really hard just to even get the new titles on the shelf on a Wednesday when they release.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that new title on your shelf on Wednesday and somebody wants to read it, they're going to go to another shop to buy that issue. They're not going to wait till Thursday or Friday. So he had a really big problem dealing with Diamond being a local smaller shop. Do you find that experience to be true still, or has it gotten better with support for smaller family owned shops?
Well, one of the biggest changes that happened while I have my since I've opened the store was switch over to they call it day early delivery. So rather than being shipped books or having books available for me Wednesday morning, books arrive Tuesday. And that required the publishers to essentially have all their books done and ready a week early. But it seemed like a valuable enough thing for them to do. And you know, I can't believe like how many people like for years and years would flip books around, you know, on Wednesday morning. It's such a luxury. Well, it's not just a luxury. It's a major part of my business now is to be able to process books on a Tuesday, be able to take some books home, read them on a Tuesday evening, and be able to have an opinion and be able to be a knowledgeable salesperson. You know, it seems like a change that was a long time coming, and you know, I'm very grateful for that.
When did that shift actually happen?
I believe about 8 years ago. You know, I think it had been something that, you know, comic store owners and different people had been lobbying for many, many years. But it was finally implemented, about 8 years ago.
What do you think was the cause of them finally implementing that? I'm sure people were asking for it for a long time before that. What do you think was the driver in them finally getting to say, no, this is something that is necessary for our industry?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I don't know the particulars. I don't remember, and I wasn't as much of an tapped in. But I think it was a sort of problems with missed deliveries or things like that where things got delayed. And that it gave an extra 24 hours buffer. And I think, you know, Diamond saw that as valuable because then they could make their guarantees better. And I think also better trust and communication between Diamond and store owners. You know, historically, there's been a lot of distrust and there's been a lot of feeling that, okay, you know, if you start shipping things early, stores are just going to put them on the shelf early. And the day early delivery was actually implemented, and we all pay $4 a week for a secret shopping network. So there's actually secret shoppers sent out to make sure that people are not breaking street date and are actually sort of following the policy.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to discuss and push us to, you know, the decisions you made in following then the struggles. We talked about your kind of the decline you had in 2016 and 17. Uh-huh. And then some of the business decisions you've made since then, and then talk about really where we stand currently.
Yeah. When I saw things were like literally kind of falling over a cliff, where sales were getting to a point where, you know, it was just not sustainable. You know, it got me really scared and really worried. What I was aware of is that, you know, a couple other businesses in San Francisco had already turned to crowdfunding to either literally save their businesses or mitigate things like the raising the minimum wage. You know, San Francisco has definitely been a big explosion of crowdfunding and a lot of interest in that. So I held an emergency community meeting and sort of laid it all out there, like what the finances of the business was and where things stood and what was needed to keep the business viable in the short term and the medium term. And it was sort of determined that launching a Patreon was the best avenue to explore. And I, you know, set out, okay, this is kind of what is needed to float the business, to really supplement where the sales were at that point. Pretty quickly met that goal. And that continued to be really sort of very valuable as there's been a few sort of fluctuations in sales over the last couple of years. And I'm really grateful for all the support that I've gotten from the community.
Yeah, I mean, it's great that obviously you important to the community and they came out and supported you via Patreon. I mean, that's one of the beauties of a platform like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, we talk about some of the numbers in comic books, and that's, you know, you did that in 2017, which was a decline nationwide when we talk about comic sales as a whole, which I think for many intuitively would say that just doesn't make sense, because that's the meteoric rise of, you know, what we talked about already with movies and kind of these franchises, the Marvels and everybody else. This is now their meteoric rise and strength, but it's
right.
Not translating down into the comic stores. It's not translating into the comic industry. You also then have segregation of some of the market shares getting split out into probably a growing percentage into things like Amazon and traditional book mediums, vice comic
sure.
stores.
Yeah. Would you like to go off on a 5-minute Jeff Bezos rant right now? It's I'm sure Bezos has affected your life like most shop owners or any mom and pop
sure.
shop.
Sure, absolutely. You know, I mean, one of the things that I say is, you know, I'm not selling a product. I'm selling a relationship. You know, I'm selling an experience of coming into the comic shop and seeing familiar faces and being able to browse. You know, it's the intangibles. You know, if you just want to buy content or product, you know, yes, you're going to be able to find it cheaper someplace else in some other form. But a lot of people are looking for something more than just the content themselves.
You know, yeah, I love bringing people into the comic book store for their first time. It's a fun experience to be a part of, you know, taking someone that's never actually walked into a comic book shop and seeing their reactions to, like, you know, I mean, because it's not just comics in a comic book shop. You do have a lot of knickknacks, a lot of collectibles, a lot of, you know, different genres of things. And, you know, when they finally hit that corner where something touches that emotional sweet spot on them, like, look, man, they got an Ecto-1 here. Like, oh, man, I remember that. I used to have that. And it brings those emotions. You don't get that from a shopping on Amazon. You don't get that, you know, with digital, in a digital realm. You know, it's fun to be a part of a store like that. And, you know, I'm glad to see that people are finding ways to be able to support local stores nowadays.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, there's this concept of the third place, you know, the place that you go in between or, you know, besides just home and work. And, you know, I see that all the time where, you know, people run into their friends at the store. They make new friends at the store. you know, that sort of like place where you can see people that share your same passions and interests is really valuable, and it's almost invaluable to people.
Yeah. But I guess, is there a concern going into the future? Because even with 2018, total sales across the comic industry increased.
Mm-hmm.
But there was actually a decrease in total sales at comic stores, which saw an increase in book channels, digital downloads, and then now they're factoring in things like Kickstarter and everything else. So now comic stores are accounting for less than 50% of total sales, and they had a decrease from 17 to 18 and looking like a decrease moving forward into 2019. Is that, how long does that experience still hold the viability of the dedicated comic book stores?
Right. No, I'm very concerned about those numbers. You know, even as I've seen sales return, I do see that sales of single issues are still down considerably, and that is worrisome. And I also see that, you know, a lot of what is propping up the comic industry as a whole is a growth in sales of kids comics and young adult comics. You know, Raina Telgemeier is a local native to San Francisco, and she is a comics making beast. Like her books just sell amazing. The Dogman books have been doing really, really well, and they're like contributing a lot to where the overall comics industry is. The sort of more traditional superhero fare is not where people's money is going to right now.
Would you say there's like a generation gap? So you're going to have your old school comic lovers like me, you know, I'm almost 40 and I prefer my trade paperbacks and my single issues and going to a store. And then you said you have your best sellers now are for the younger age. So I'm assuming, you know, kids between the ages of 7 and 12 or something like that. Do you find that there's like a millennial gap that just never got into the comic book or comic book store experience? And we're kind of just seeing this gap play out in sales.
I think there's a couple things going on. I mean, the kids comics are not just what are selling well for me. Those are national numbers, and it's people are getting those books in non-traditional places. They're getting them off of Amazon and Walmart, you know, in book fairs. Scholastic book fairs are selling a lot of comics. You know, I am concerned about the local comic stores and how they're able to pivot and try to capture more of that younger readers. And also, you know, bring in parents too, and bring in people that have maybe had experience with comics and have dipped out of it, and bringing them back into it. You know, right now we're in a year without Saga, I call it, where Saga's on an intermission. And that's a huge thing for my store, and I think for a lot of stores, because that has really brings in civilians. So we really haven't had that next Saga, that sort of bigger hit from Image, and I think we'd all love that.
Yeah.
Now, do you the physical form of comics is still, it's still an experience that true fans want, but digital is growing. It still accounts for about less than 10% of total.
I hate digital comics.
I think
there's nothing worse than reading a comic on a tablet or on a laptop screen. Like,
yeah, but at this point, it accounts for about 10% of total sales.
Right?
Do we see that continuing to parse off more of kind of the total industry market share there?
Yeah, I mean, they don't share numbers, but what I've heard anecdotally is that digital sales have actually been flat for many, many years now. You know, they sort of skyrocketed in the first couple of years, and they've essentially, you know, leveled out. They haven't really been able to bump those numbers up, partially because I think they've trained that audience to just wait for sales. So that sort of flattens the numbers. And I think also, you know, they have a limited inherent audience. There is some growth, I guess, on the subscription model, you know, the sort of Comixology Unlimited, the Marvel Unlimited. But yeah, digital comics have not really grown in a substantial way.
Yeah, and like you said, the numbers do support that. I think since 2012 is what the numbers I'm looking at. It pretty much has hovered around the 70 million to 100 million total dollar amount. So not a big growth, not nearly as much as the total comic book industry growth. I imagine that publishers, like you said, with subscription services, DC, Marvel, now trying to kind of get their back catalogs and things out on these subscription services and trying to increase that, the digital medium. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it will ever pick up because comics is a form that it's really benefited by it being in your hand.
I can't have Mark Brooks sign my fucking tablet and then, you know, I can't get my iPad CGC graded. And, you know, yep. So there's a big component to comics that you lose digitally. You know, the part, I think a lot of what people buy comics for is to scratch that collector itch in a lot of us. Not only do we love the characters, love the art, love the stories, but we love having something that is limited, that is, you know, that can go up in value. You know, every time you buy a comic, you're wondering, you know, is this the comic that has a new character in it that 15 years from now is going to blow up and next thing you know is going to be, you know, the next big thing. You know, I have a lot of comics on my shelf that I bought on a whim just because I wanted to give the story a chance. And now 20 years later are worth some money, you know, because I got in on the ground floor of a lot of good stories and a lot of good characters. You don't get that with digital. You lose all that. And I think that lottery kind of aspect to where, you know, I might have the new first appearance of Deadpool by buying this issue. I think that's a lot of what drives some of these comic sales too.
I would agree with all that, but I've also heard that like the number one sort of factor in comic sales is the number of stores. When there are a lot of stores, people sell a lot of comics. When the number of stores drop, there's less comics being sold. And that's partly because I think, you know, knowledgeable salespeople that know comics and can really sort of share their love and passion and evangelize for comics really make a difference. And, you know, anything that both the publishers and Diamond can do to make it easier for comic stores to stay in business, help them sell comics, and you know they want to sell comics. Yeah.
Do you think that they'll eventually though sell out to the major corporations like an Amazon just based on the fact that, you know, I'd rather take a guaranteed 500,000 in sales than a maybe 750, but divvied out in 100 different places, 1,000 different places. You know, I find that a lot of the corporate trends, they want that guaranteed money so they can budget their, you know, their yearly growth and their yearly income, you know, to whereas if you're spreading it out wide amongst a bunch of mom and pop shops, your sales could be up, they could be down, they can fluctuate.
Right.
But if you got a major corporation like Amazon just guaranteeing, yeah, we're going to buy 500,000 and we're just going to stock them and, you know, we'll do what we do.
Yeah.
That could be, you know, really hurtful to the industry.
Yeah, they want to mitigate risk and they've tried things like that. You know, they did like the GameStop exclusive comics and the Hastings exclusive comics, and those have bolstered their numbers. And they've, you know, tried the Walmart exclusive stuff, but, you know, just putting them on a shelf in these places doesn't seem to really sell them. What's the missing factor is, you know, the passionate comic store owner. So, and that seems to be at least at this point, a safer bet than these sort of corporate deals that are often just flashes in the pan. You know, they often spike the numbers on a particular thing or spike the numbers for a year, but then those things fail or go out of business or shift to doing something else. You know, everyone wants to mitigate their risk for sure, but at least so far, the mom and pop comic stores are the safer bet.
It's a tough position to be in because, like I said, I had a mom and pop shop that I used to go to every Wednesday or every other Wednesday. I had a subscription box, so I didn't have to go in every week. He pulled my stuff aside for me. But I find it, as you're just driving through the cities, driving through town, you don't see as many of those shops anymore. Like I said, all the closest shops around me currently are graham crackers, I really yearn for that family owned spot. I'm a small business owner. I support my family off of my business, and my customers. So I'm very sympathetic to that position. I don't blame people for being hesitant to open up a shop knowing that they're going to have to deal with the issues that you deal with on a daily basis. And I find it hard to figure out how to be part of that solution other than finding a store and buying comics from that store. As far as getting one opened around in my neighborhood, I have no desire to open a comic book shop. I commend you for taking the initiative and doing it yourself.
Sure. I don't recommend it, but
if I won the lotto tomorrow, not a doubt in my mind. I'd pay some nerd to sit in there, and if it never made a dollar, I wouldn't be mad. But I feel that it's hard to even get someone to recognize, look, there's not a mom and pop shop within 15 miles of here. I should be the one to do it. It's hard to drive that initiative to solve this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult business for sure. And there are some inherent problems sort of based on the history of the direct market and how the business is run. But there's some real positive things going on too. One of the things I think is really great is there's a lot more open, ongoing communication and feedback between store owners and the publishers. There's a couple private Facebook groups where comic store owners are able to offer feedback and say more immediately what things are working and what things are not working. And publishers are more open to listening because they recognize that sort of feedback is more valuable and more immediate than just sort of looking at the numbers from the whole. One of the other things that's sort of changing and just in the more recent factor is more returnability, so that comic stores can order a bit more knowing that if they order too much, they can return it for credit. And that makes a big difference.
Yeah, I'm sure that helps drastically. With Kickstarter being a major selling point, like we said, driving issues actually being bought. Are comic book stores reaching out to some of these Kickstarter creators to stock? Like, do you have a Kickstarter shelf in your store where you seek out some of these successful Kickstarter campaigns and get them to send you 10 issues and, market it as Kickstarter approved?
Mm-hmm. Have a back and forth relationship with the Kickstarter books. I've definitely been active in supporting a lot of Kickstarters and stocking a lot of Kickstarters with some medium success. Unfortunately, some of the Kickstarter books, what they're doing is they're selling directly to their audience and they're sort of reaching the full capacity and beyond their audience. So there isn't necessarily an audience in the comic store looking for those books because they've already got it because they're fans of that creator or they're not fans of that creator. But there are still sort of Kickstarters that I do back, particularly local ones where I have a relationship with them and they're working on creating a local fan base. I've had success with those types of things.
Yeah, I struggle with trying to find like the end all be all answer to support local business. I find it's very important. You know, it's a cause I think that most of us should be concerned with. We have a big problem with companies becoming, you know, monopolies or duopolies nowadays, yeah. And just owning every aspect of our life, which doesn't give consumers very much kind of choice, and it doesn't drive innovation very well. And, you know, just as the local bookstores, you know, took a big hit, you know, when a company like Borders goes out of business, you know, something's going down.
Yeah, these problems are not restricted to just the comic industry. They're sort of like general sort of issues of, you know, how we want to live our lives and how we sort of like react to the sort of growing rise of these mega corporations, and how do we support the things that we want to see in our own community, and, you know, where do we want to sort of form relationships with people and community. And it's a struggle for sure. Yeah,
for me it's difficult. The local businesses, and even not just local businesses, but the old staples of certain industries, they have significant struggles. You know, you see, you know, even Toys R Us closing and stuff like that. There's companies failing to pivot and adapt to really the new way people want to consume and purchase materials. The comic stores still have a place, because it's not just, like you said, it's not just about the products being sold. Because if it was, mm-hmm. that can be done cheaper, it can be done easily from your couch. But it comes down to kind of that community feel. And how long does that community feel in the comic book stores continue to make comic stores viable? I hope it lasts a great deal of time, but I imagine it only becomes more and more of a challenge as people just don't want to go anywhere anymore.
Yeah. What methods in your Patreon campaign or anything like that did you use to try to build that bridge? So I'm an electrician by trade. I own my own electrical uh-huh. company, and I have a Facebook page to promote my business. And one of the things I try to do to build that bridge is show like videos of my daughter at her piano lessons, and let people know that by using my services and being loyal customers and referring me to other customers, you're not just supporting my business, but you're also supporting, you know, my 4-year-old daughter's piano lessons, my, you know, 8-month-old daughter's preschool, you know, like I try to get people bought into the story that your dollar goes more towards, you know, things that you should be proud of, you know, as a consumer going to. How did you try to build that bridge yourself with your Patreon campaign?
You know, I think I definitely subscribe to that idea of, like, you know, showing that you're supporting more than just a business, that, you know, it is about a relationship. And, you know, but I think my focus has more been sort of like my in-person relationships with my customers, you know, the fact that, like, I see a lot of my customers, my regulars, you know, about every 7 to 10 days for years on end is something that, you know, any business would, you know, be envious of. You know, it's a really strong relationship, and to see people's lives change and you know, I guess that sort of relationship of, like, it's really tight and really important to people. And I think, you know, when the sort of the danger cries go out, people react to that. It's an ongoing struggle, I think, you know, of sort of.
Did your customers recognize fairly quickly that in order to keep that relationship, which prior to now they were getting as a added bonus to shopping in your store, was it easy for them to translate that into a monetary value that they seen, you know, worth giving you a $5, $10 a month to make sure that they could keep that relationship?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. People were really quick to sort of say that, you know, this had a value in their life more than just the things or the experiences, something that they wanted to see continue.
What we do a lot of times here on the Nerd Cantina, or Steve, he tries to play this role of Nerdstradamus and predict things out in the future and come up with some wild predictions. And
sure.
I was wondering if you have maybe some predictions on where you see your business and the comic industry as a whole, say, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, where is the growth, or where are the directions you think the industry needs to pivot or change or just keep going the way it is?
I think that the kids market is going to continue to grow, and particularly as the kids that are reading Dog Man and Smile and other Raina books and stuff like that age. And that generation is also going to start to make a lot of interesting comics. And we're continue to see sort of more voices in the medium. As far as the superheroes, I think, you know, we're going to continue to see a lot of that migrate into other media. And maybe some of that sort of lower selling books go away. You know, that doesn't seem sustainable. You know, I think the publishers are publishing too much, and we're going to see sort of some contractions in the single issue.
Yeah, I hope these publishers pull back from the annual summer events with 32 tie-ins, and, you know, they're printing a lot of books on the basis that, well, if you want to know every little bit about this story arc that we're doing, you're going to have to buy X-Factor this and X-Men that, and, you know, sure, Uncanny that. I'm hoping they rein that in a little bit and stop trying to spread it out amongst 30 titles to get you to buy 30 titles, because I don't see those days happening anymore, you know, of the loyal fan buying every issue associated with this Marvel event,
yeah,
or DC event that's going down, and they just kind of,
yeah,
compact it, you know, into you know. Do you see independence really continuing on a upper trajectory, just based on the fact that, you know, the traditional superheroes, we got a shit ton of movies out about them now. They've been around for 100 years. Like, I can only read so much Batman. I can only read so much X-Men. Like, do you see,
yeah,
the sagas of the world really starting to take more of a prevalent presence on the stage of comics?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of creators that are fed up of creating things for corporations. They want to own the things that they make, and they want to share in the profit. I think that there will be more creators that see that that is a path to success, you know, that they can create something in comics, and maybe it can be adapted into film and TV, and they can actually make a living and, you know, not be working themselves to literally death, as, you know, that happened in past generations.
Yeah.
So I think that's a really positive thing.
Yeah, we're just venturing into my own creator-owned. I have a few scripts that I've been working on, and we're probably going to go the Kickstarter route also to
awesome.
Try to get our things published. But I also, you know, I've talked to my brother about it. You know, we're going to rely on a Kickstarter audience to get funded, but I also do want to print out enough issues to drive around the state of Illinois and email people and try to get 5 issues on a shelf in a local store somewhere.
Yeah.
and things like that. Do you find a lot of the creators of these Kickstarter campaigns seek out stores in that aspect also, that they're not just relying on their Kickstarter audience, that they also want to be on the shelf?
Some do and some don't. I mean, I think, you know, ultimately the ones that sort of succeed beyond, you know, one Kickstarter or one thing, you know, really start to build relationships in the industry. You know, comics is still a pretty small business. And if you want to succeed, it is about sort of building relationships. And, you know, the easiest relationships to build are the ones that you can have face to face and in your own sort of local community too. So, yeah, I think that's a great idea to sort of go around and talk to local stores and they will be your biggest cheerleaders for sure.
Thank you for your time. Real fast before we're done, for those who are listening, how can they support you and find you online?
It's missioncomicsandart.com. And you can also find the Patreon at patreon.com/missioncomic. Yeah, I'm active on Facebook and Twitter and all the usual places too. So, yeah.
You know, we appreciate your time and coming on here and giving us a lot of insider information on the business aspects of comics. We hope that we inspired a few people to maybe open a shop in these deserted lands of mom and pop shops. I'm sure we might have scared a few people off, but hopefully we inspired a few to follow a few of those dreams.
Yeah. Or at least inspire somebody who hasn't been to a shop in a while to just recognize that there's more to it than just going in and grabbing whatever, you know, latest issue you want to pull and walking out. What you're supporting there is really a community-based industry.
And to leave on a really positive note, just yesterday I had a long-term customer that had been shopping at my store for years and years, and he was about to move to LA, and he just wanted to tell me like what a positive impact my store had had on his life, and just like being able to discover new books and being able to really explore his passions made a huge impact. And that was really like heart touching and heartbreaking. And, you know, you don't get that in a lot of businesses for sure. And it's amazing.
You know, when you're family owned business, you truly appreciate your customers. And as a customer, I do really like to feel appreciated and feel like I have a value as a customer. You lose that with a lot of the big markets, and it's good to hear that you've taken on that task of being, you know, a pillar of the community and offering a service that is hard to find nowadays.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Leif, I appreciate the candid conversation and discussion around your industry and your expertise.
Oh, yeah, you're totally welcome, and good luck with the podcast, and I hope you continue to grow your audience and do well with it.
We appreciate that. Right. Best of luck to you too, sir.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot.
Hey, nerds, thanks for listening to episode 20 of the Nerd Cantina Show. This was our Cantina conversation with Leif Smith, and Leif is he's a staple in the nerd community. If you think of some of the pinnacles of nerdism, being a comic store owner is one of them. Not a glorious job, maybe not an easy job.
Not all heroes wear capes. So.
Yeah, but it is. I mean, it is a staple in every community. There is hopefully a local comic store owner who's furthering that community feel, given a safe place for nerds.
No, we need these guys. I actually miss my weekly or bi-weekly stops in the comic book store when me and Stu used to, you know, go on our lunch breaks to go pick up our comics on Wednesdays, and Ray from Comics Galore he'd always be behind the counter every damn day, you know, and he'd have my fresh books ready for me and some good conversation, because he would read them. He'd be reading all the new comics as we walked in, and, you know, he was just a old, you know, at the time when I was, he's probably my age when I was going there, but we were a lot younger, and, you know, he was just a friendly face to talk to, socially awkward, kind of really nerdy, but loved his customers because we were what supported his life, and really, you know, I really value small businesses that appreciate their customers. So I frequent the same family-owned restaurants. I frequent, you know, the same, you know, kind of small-time stores. If you build a relationship with me as a customer, as an owner, I come back. I'm one of those loyal people, you know what I mean? And the comic book stores, if we're going to lose that, it's going to be a really sad day for me. I really like that camaraderie and that appreciation.
Yeah, and I really tried to use a lot of the comic sales in this episode to drive the conversation. And it wasn't to poke Leif in the eye and play doomsday on his life's passion and business, but it was just to point out to our listeners something that I know Leif is already aware of, that there are struggling times and the trends will only make things more difficult. And listeners and fellow nerds out there need to recognize that the convenient decision of maybe buying a trade in Amazon, if it's not the comic store, you're running the risk of losing them altogether. It is an industry that's going to struggle with the digital age as it continues to just make our lives so much easier to consume things away from physical
and property. Life shouldn't always be about convenience, right? I mean, you know, like I get it that the buy now button on your phone, it makes a lot of life, easy.
I'm a victim of it all the time.
You know, but you do need to kind of pick and choose your battles, you know? So if you're just looking for that new doodad or whatever that you want, yeah, hit the buy now. But, you know, if you're passionate about something, which I think most collectors are, you know, if you, you know, want to be part of like the comic book community, I think you're doing a disservice to the community by hitting those buy nows and things like that. So you kind of need to just take the initiative. You know, it sucks getting your ass up off the couch, but once you walk in the store, you'll be glad you did it. You know, so yeah. It's one of those situations that we all have those moments where you're like, oh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to have to fucking go. And then you end up forcing yourself in the car. And then when you get there, once you get in the experience, you're like, oh, I'm really glad I'm not a lazy piece of shit and went and did this, you know? So I really hope that a lot of our listeners, you know, get that motivation now. If you haven't been in a comic book store and you've been thinking about buying them online, listening to his story maybe kind of now puts a different perspective on it for you. And maybe you go and try to build a relationship with that guy at the counter. Not everybody behind the counter owns the store, but if you're working that counter at a comic book store, it's because you love to do it. It sure as shit ain't for the fucking money. Let's be honest.
Yeah, there's a local place here in Oceanside called Panels, and it's a coffee shop that's it's a comic book themed coffee shop, and they have comic books. And I try to take the kids there, get them hot chocolates. I grab coffee. We sit and browse through. It's just something. Hopefully, I hope they continue to exist as my kids get older, and it's a place that I can go and kind of point out things that I'm interested in. And
that kind of speaks to the niche stuff that we said that comics are starting to get into to survive. You know, providing board game space. You know, having theme nights and whatnot. You know, the days of just putting books on the shelf and getting people to come in are kind of waning down, but you know they're trying to build kind of like what we are. They're trying to build a community of their local neighborhood nerds, and every Friday night, Saturday night, Wednesday nights come in for this theme, you know, magic, whatever it may be, you know. So yeah, I think that Panels idea is pretty cool. It's a nerd Starbucks or something, you know. Nerd Bucks.
Yeah. Well, the common theme is the nerds are out there and support the comic stores and support podcasts, support Nerd Podcast, doing hopefully interesting things, having good conversations.
Yeah, nerds, we dominate pop culture. Let's let's show the world that we are the great community that we are, that we're not just a bunch of dudes bitching about fucking the latest, you know, nerd movie or comic book movie, but yeah, that we're actually a community of people that, you know, even though we passionately debate about things and we get heated at times, but we are a community that support each other. We're a community that appreciate everybody's space in the nerd, you know, realm. Yeah, just go out and support.
We would ask that you share this episode or share your favorite Nerd Canteen episode with one other person this week. Encourage them to subscribe.
Yeah, when we say nerds, we're included. So
yeah.
help a brother out. Help a brother out.
But yeah, help us grow our audience. Share it with somebody else. If you enjoy what we're doing, if you enjoy the conversations, ask one other person who might enjoy it to give us a listen and to hit subscribe. We're still trying to grow this community. Join the Facebook group at thenerdcantina.com.
Yeah, I can't stress community about how much fun we're having in this Facebook group. You know, we had 90 something comments on that Keanu Reeves anagram meme that's been going around. I was really impressed with some people's creativity. I think I somewhat dominated a little bit in my originality. I will pat myself on the back for that. I'll stroke my own ego.
I'm trying to remember. There was somebody who had like 18 of them on there.
Once you hit a certain number, I think you're just copying and pasting from other memes. I don't know. My buddy, it was my buddy Chris. He from World of Warcraft. He was a Pwn of Puddin' in World of Warcraft. He was our Death Knight. But yeah, he put like 20 something of them up, and I was just like, I think this dude Googled these. <It's> like, because mine came straight off the cuff, no research.
You got to discredit anybody who's better than you.
Yeah, I don't. He's a pretty nice guy and he's a pretty honest guy, so I didn't want to. I wasn't going to call him out on the thread. But the more I sit and think about it, like, man.
No, just call him out on the national podcast.
Yeah, now, you know what I mean? We'll test if he's listening. All right, Pwn, you fucker.
All right, we're off message here. Support and like our page. Join the Facebook community and leave us a rating review on iTunes if it's 5 stars. If it's not, keep your opinions to yourself. And,
We want fives or nothing. I mean, really, you're going to give us a 4? You're that dick? Like, we didn't earn that last star for you?
All right. Damn it. We just can't do this straight. All right. Thanks, nerds, for listening.
Yeah, come back.
This ends episode 20. Come back next time.
See you next week.
Real quick, we just wanted to mention one of our favorite new apps, which is PodCoin. So assuming that because you're listening to our podcast today, that you happen to be a podcasting nerd. And if you are, I can't see any reason why you wouldn't want to get paid for your time.
I'm a big fan of getting paid to do stuff that I do in my daily routine. Anyways, I sign up for all the rewards programs possible. And with PodCoin, you actually get paid to listen to podcasts. So every minute that goes by that you're listening to your podcast, you are throwing away potential money.
So go ahead, download PodCoin app on either through iTunes or through the Google Play Store. And when you sign up with the promo code NerdCantina.
One word. That'll get you 300 free coins towards your account and get you on your way to earning that first reward from either Amazon gift card, Target gift cards, all kinds of things. You could also donate your coins to your favorite charity that they offer. If you're going to be listening to podcasts anyways, you might as well get some free stuff for doing it. So download the PodCoin app, put in the code NerdCantina, get your free coins, and start earning money while you listen to our show.